And thank you all for coming. And thanks to the amazing library system for making this resource available to all of us. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good, good, good. So how many of you have already been to Cuba? Oh, yes, they came on a journey's trip. How many of you are thinking maybe you'd like to go to Cuba? Great, 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 great. And are there people here who have been on other trips with journeys but not to Cuba? Good, good. So, you know, we're all about crossing borders and exploring things that are completely different. And here's Cuba, 90 miles from the United States. And as unexplored for me as any place I've ever been, and I've been so thrilled to be learning about it, to be traveling there, and to be able to share it with all of you. 700 miles from east to west, no more than about 120 miles from north to south. It's a little country, but it is the largest island in the Caribbean. And just to get us, we'll show you more specifically different parts of Cuba throughout the show, but just you get a sense here of even some of the places where flights are now flying into. You know, now we've been going by charter flights, but there is commercial air that can be booked into Cuba. Just this week, they've announced not that there'll be flight taking bookings into Havana. Some of the other cities have opened up sooner than Havana. So I'm Joan, as some of you know. My husband and I started Journeys in 1978. Our daughter Robin runs the company now. And what we do is find the most amazing people we can possibly find in the countries that we want to explore, people who have the right sensibility about welcoming guests in a respectful way and really bringing them deep inside a country to meet the people. And we were very, very fortunate to connect with Jocelyn, and I'll let her introduce herself.
Well, thank you again so much for coming tonight. Again, my name is Jocelyn Fritz. I'm the founder of Experience Cuba. I have been involved in the adventure travel industry for the last 9 years, leading trips all over the world. I've been very fortunate to see a lot of this world. And 5 years ago, I took my first trip to Cuba as a tour leader and really fell in love with the country. And now I live in Havana. I've led over 80 trips throughout all the island, and was thrilled to be working now with Journeys International to be really developing some unique and authentic itineraries for their trips, right? And the idea of what we're going to be talking about tonight is just to give a brief overview of, you know, what is travel to Cuba? How do I travel to Cuba? Why should I travel to Cuba? How can I travel to Cuba? We're going to talk about some of the places that you might want to see, some of the sites, right? And then at the end, we'll have time for question and answers. Okay, great.
To start, just a little bit of the underpinnings. Mm-hmm. First of all, you will see huge urban areas. That's Havana, agricultural lands, mountains, coastline. And you'll also be aware throughout the trip that this is a country that still defines their way of life as living their revolution. So they're continuing to defend the revolution, that you see signs saying it in various ways. It doesn't mean that they're fighting a war anymore. It means that they're absolutely committed to certain values of the revolution. It comes up, everything will, that you learn on the trip will be in connection to that. They're very proud of what came starting with the revolution in 1959 and since. Free medical care for everybody, free education all the way up through professional schools, doctors, engineers. They have the largest medical school in the world and train thousands and thousands of doctors from developing countries around the world at this medical school campus. And the arts. The arts are encouraged and they are presented, they're taught to children. There's opportunities to learn them and there's opportunities for people to see the arts without having to pay money for their tickets. The flip side is it's been an economic struggle. everything is centrally owned and centrally controlled. So you might have that free education that made you into a doctor or an engineer. You then get a job where you're paid by the government, and you probably are not making enough money at that job to even support your family. So people will say, and people are warm and friendly, and they talk, and they're happy that we're there, and we have amazing conversations. And I've heard from a couple people, yes. But with the revolution, we got free education, free medical care, we got the arts, and it was all in exchange for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So you go to the market, it's not overflowing like you might expect a country in such a lush, tropical place to have markets. Look, they have stuff. And then also they still have ration books for people to get their very basic. So this is a very sparse store, and people come with their rations. They're allowed to get a certain amount of certain basic ingredients for their family, and they sign in and they get what they, you know, just what they're allowed to get and leave. It's changing. So throughout the talk, we'll be talking about tonight we'll be showing examples of what that means. It's certainly evident in tourism. It's certainly evident when you see the vintage cars, which are not just kitsch for tourists. They're there because there were no more cars brought in after the revolution, and so they're keeping their cars from the 1940s and 1950s running, and they're all over. And then there's commerce and there's cruise ships. So this is just a little glimpse of Havana. And as Jocelyn teaches us when we arrive, we should often expect an answer to the question that we'll have, and we'll have many, many questions. Eventually, they'll try to answer. We'll keep asking because we don't quite get it. Why are you doing this way when it would be much better to do it this way? And they'll just say, es complicado. It's complicated. Es complicado. And it's like, all right, it's complicated. And we had to just ride with that quite often. So what happens when you get there, Jocelyn? Or how do you make your decisions of what to do?
So I want to talk a little bit about the logistics of travel to Cuba. You know, it's been in the news so much recently. And there's a couple of different ways now that you can travel to Cuba. So ever since 1999, the Clinton administration started a program called People-to-People Travel. And what is people-to-people travel? People-to-people travel means that you're really interacting with local Cubans. You are, for example, visiting a community project, right? Maybe you're interacting with community members who are building a local community area where people gather and have music classes, perhaps. Maybe you're visiting a contemporary dance studio and you are able to see a dance performance and then talk with the dancers afterwards and learn about their everyday lives, right? Maybe you're visiting a polyclinic and you're learning more about the educational health system, system there in Cuba. And so it's really the kind of travel that I personally am interested in when I go travel abroad, and I think it's exactly what Journeys is interested in as well, is really kind of more of a one-on-one level, right? Specifically, travel to Cuba for purely touristic reasons, right, is not allowed. So what does that mean? That means that you can't go to Cuba and just sit on the beach and drink a mojito, you know? And I am here to tell you that there's a lot more to do and to see than just sit on the beach and drink a mojito, right? So as of December 17th, 2014, the Obama administration has made it easier to travel to Cuba. But I want to be really clear, because I find a lot of my people that come travel with me, they think, well, you know, now the embargo is over, right? We can just travel. No. The embargo is still in place, but the Obama administration has made it easier to travel. And what does that mean? That means that you can go to Cuba on one of the 12 categorized licenses, 12 categories, if you will. And of those 12 categories, there's academic reasons, professional meetings, etc. And then there's also the people-to-people travel. And so that's one that we're going to be focusing on. You have in some of your material that we have set itineraries that Journeys offers, right? And then we also, that's in a group setting, right? And you know, something to kind of note about our group trips You'll find there's a lot of people offering trips now to Cuba. You're traveling with 24 people, right? And that's not the way I like to travel. So our groups are smaller, a maximum of 15 people. And this really allows us to kind of get in and welcome ourselves into some of my contacts, some of my friends down in Cuba, and we go into their homes and talk to them, right? The other option now, you do have your opportunity to travel on an individual license. And what that means is that you can make your own people-to-people program, right? Now with the start of commercial flights, what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to buy your ticket online and check a box, fill out a form saying that you're traveling to Cuba on one of those 12 categorized reasons of travel, right? And then you are responsible yourself for keeping track of all of the people that you meet, their contact information, keeping a set idea of what you did on your trip, right? And though it's very unlikely, the Office of Foreign Assets Control can audit you and say, hey, we noticed that you went to Cuba. What were you doing there? Who did you meet? Please tell us your itinerary. So the idea with going with a tour is that, you know, we really take care of that for you. We take care of all of that legality, right? So you can just kind of sit back and enjoy Cuba. So our next site, we're talking about Havana, the cosmopolitan city, right? 2.2 million people live in Havana. The whole population of Cuba is 11 million people. It's the largest island in the Caribbean, excuse me. This is just a nice slide to show you where you're gonna stay. You know, in the top right corner, you have Hotel Nacional, which is a landmark hotel. We travel around in our groups of 15 and really comfortable air-conditioned buses. And you'll notice that there I am with our driver Angel on the left, and Carlos is on the right. This is our local driver and our local guide. So for our group tours, we have two people. We have somebody who's like myself. Oftentimes I accompany the group, who really lives in Cuba, who knows a lot about Cuba, but obviously, you know, you want to have your local Cuban guide as well, who's really going to give you an idea of what's going on. And then you also see a picture of a paladar. Paladar is a privately owned restaurant. This is an example of a small enterprise that's now growing, right, to deal with this kind of a booming tourist boom that's happening, right? This is an example you'll see here of the Malecón on the back, the beautiful seawall. This is right in Havana. It's a really lovely place to take a walk. At night, it just comes alive with people. And then, you know, a really surprise that people are surprised when they see is the Capitol building located in Havana, modeled after our Capitol building.
So, Havana is as decrepit as you might have thought or guessed or heard, and it's also as beautiful and renovated as you've probably been gleaning if you've been reading about Cuba. So you will see large neighborhoods of old tenements like that. There are large families living in each of those apartments, and the buildings are in terrible repair. But then you also have sections like this is old Havana, which have been restored. And this is a beautiful view of the city from across the harbor. Now, we're talking about Havana in these first few pictures. Some people only go to Havana, and some of what you will see in Havana, you will see in a more personal and different scale other places. But music and dance is everywhere. And also, it seems like Jocelyn knows almost every musical troupe and performer. So we get invited to rehearsals, we sit and we meet people by name, and we get a lot of opportunity to talk.
Yeah. And I think that's something I want to stress about travel to Cuba. Travel to Cuba is more challenging than other destinations. And the reason for that is that there's very little advertising, right? You might walk by a building, you have no idea that there's a fantastic dance troupe that's practicing there. Or you might walk by what seems like an abandoned street or something, and there is a really wonderful community project that's going on, right? And so this is really one of those instances where traveling with a group, traveling with somebody who knows the area, really adds to your trip. Just for example, here you'll see these small enterprises. These are cuentapropistas, as they are known in Cuba. These are people who are now cutting hair. They're making a living off of that instead of having a state job, and that they're now really developing their own business.
Mm-hmm. So what we learned, people were explaining to us from the very beginning, from day one, a lot of the origin of some of the even ability to have your own business came from what they called the special period. And the special period, it was an excruciatingly difficult time in Cuban history. In 1990, when the Soviet Union fell apart, and they withdrew all their support for Cuba. And Cuba was left on its own, and they did not have enough fuel, they did not have the energy, they did not have the vehicles, they couldn't get people to work, they didn't have resources. And starvation was a real possibility, and it was a dire situation. And so permission was granted for the first time since the revolution, but people could maybe cut somebody's hair in their house and get some money. Or maybe they could have a couple of tables in their house and serve some food. Maybe even have a guest in their house and pay for them to stay overnight. What's happened then is that there's this entrepreneurial spirit working its way from the bottom up. Anything that's bigger, that would even be called small or mid-sized, is hard to find. Just starting. And then anything big has to be majority owned by the Cuban government. So here we met Jocelyn, introduced us to one of her very good friends who's a bookseller. And he's an engineer by training, but he can make more money by selling books in the square. And then, as Jocelyn mentioned, the hair cutting. And then we have this sweeper over there who's very entrepreneurial. She's a street sweeper, but she does this in Old Havana, and a lot of tourists walk through Old Havana. So she has the flower, and she has a cigar, and she has an Obama button, and she's happy to pose for pictures in exchange for just a little bit of money. So that's her own micro business. That's just a little glimpse into the foundation that's kind of holding up this whole thing, and then that we try to take this understanding and build on it as we explore more of the country.
Yeah, so we're going to go over now three different routes, three different areas of Cuba that you can travel to. We're going to start with kind of the bread and butter, if you will, of when people are taking their first trip to Cuba, talking with Havana, Cienfuegos, and Trinidad. Okay.
So, in fact, we call this... We have an itinerary called Rhythm of a Lively Land. A few people in this room did that trip with us last year, starting in Havana, going over by bus down to the coast here. This is the center of the country, Cienfuegos and Trinidad. And then via Santa Clara, which has a long history and is associated with Che Guevara and the revolution. And then off the beaten path a bit to a little area called Remedios, and that's we're going to show you a sequence of pictures that will take you through that trip. After that, we'll show you just a couple of pictures from the other itineraries as well.
So Cienfuegos translates to 100 fires, right? It is not on fire. It is actually known as the Pearl of the South, founded by French colonials in 1819. It has a beautiful harbor, a lovely area to walk around in. Here you'll see bicycle taxis, BC taxis, and there's a really lively art and music scene that happens here. You'll see here, this is Omar Valenti that's showcasing his photography. There's Kathy right there, with one of our travelers. And this is Omar's house to the right. He is an active participant in the U.S.-Cuba Artist Project. Was really excited. I was passing through the Minneapolis airport earlier this year, and his work was showcased in the airport itself. And so I was really excited for Omar that, you know, through this interaction that's happening with people-to-people programs, that he's able to showcase his work even more.
And in the upper right, you see another one of these family-owned private restaurants called the Paladar. If you read our materials, and we'll say, oh, yeah, lunch or dinner today at a Paladar. These are what have turned into restaurants, but had their origins in the special period when people got permission to have one or two tables in their houses. So there's nothing stamped out about them. They're not chains. Everyone is different and creative, and we get to sample quite a variety of them. And then we go to Trinidad, which is in contrast to Cienfuegos, which is sort of a bright white French colonial from the 1800s, Trinidad is a 500-year-old city.
And traditional ways of transportation, you know, this is very common to see locals traveling around with a horse and buggy, and even more traditional as you get to eastern Cuba, right?
So the Trinidad is if people only go to one other place other than Havana, it's very often Trinidad. And so they did not have the infrastructure to handle all of the tourists that were coming. And so this movement, again, that originated with people being able to have someone sleep in their house in a bed for a night, has grown into a whole system of casas particulares, their private homes, which take guests like bed and breakfast. They were way ahead of Airbnb. And this, it's basically this concept. You are staying in people's homes. These homes are registered. And Jocelyn does a great job of screening, choosing, and making sure that the ones that she chooses for her guests are really available, because there's a lot of a tendency for Cubans almost not to trust that this, you can take a reservation in advance and maybe get paid for it later, and that you'll really be able to collect. And so if somebody shows up at the door of some of these places, the host might let them in. And then if you were a individual traveler, not with a group, and you thought you had a reservation, you might come and they might say sorry. So Jocelyn, we trust Jocelyn to make sure that doesn't happen. And this is just an example of one of the casas in Trinidad where a few of us stayed last year, this past winter.
This is a slide of just some of the people that we meet on tour. This is my, up in the top left is Lianis. She's the founder of a weaving cooperative in Trinidad. And then her husband, Lazaro, is an artist who etches photographs of local people from Trinidad into recycled pieces of wood from doors, and incredibly talented. And you know, this is an example of a people-to-people activity. And so we go to their home. We have a canchanchara, which is a local drink, right? Known in Trinidad. And then, you know, we talk to them. We meet their kids. We listen to how they started their work. Lianis is now employing about 30 different women in all parts of Cuba. And so it's really interesting to be able to go and talk to her and kind of understand this concept of a cooperative, which is so normal for us, but it's relatively new in Cuba. You know, and the thing is that there's so many different stores now in Trinidad that sell these kind of crocheted works. And if you didn't know, you might pass Lianis's store not knowing that it's really a completely different thing that, than what other people are offering.
And right outside of Trinidad, you're in the mountains. And so we do a day trip from Trinidad into one of the national parks. And this is the scenery that we're driving through along the way. When we get to the high point, we can look out and see the coast. And then we get to Topeka de Calientes National Park, where they have trained guides, naturalists, who lead us on walks. We get into deep into the park in that truck up there, and then start walking. Orchids, bamboo, birds. It's very, very rich.
This is another stop that we make. This is Omar. And then this is, Omar is to the far right, and Omar's dad and his mother, they live right next to each other. This is a local coffee farmer, and so we, you know, go into Omar's house, we have a cup of coffee, we learn the process of growing coffee. There's Lene with Omar holding a coffee plant, and we talk to him about what his harvest is like, how much he has to sell to the government, how much he can keep for himself. We have a chance to, you know, really talk one-on-one with them and really walk in their houses. And this is really what at the core is what a people-to-people program is all about.
So continuing to this variety, this intensity, and this connection is all happening in 8 days. And we after we leave the Trinidad area and the National Park area, we go a little bit north again into the center. We stop in Santa Clara and learn more about Che Guevara, who is a hero in Cuba and was right by Fidel when they won their revolution succeeded. And so there is a museum and a memorial to Che Guevara in Santa Clara. And a lot of other stuff happens there. We get to visit with people there too. So, and we go on to Remedios, this quiet little town where we have a peaceful visit with the locals. There's a little whimsy there, somebody with his little pedicab with a Cuban flag on it. And cap off this particular week with an amazing event. Jocelyn set this up behind the scenes, and she told us, some of us in the group were we weren't as much night owls as some of the others, and some of us didn't go out dancing every night, but she said, don't skip this. I'm just telling you, don't skip this. And she took us, we went in the car, the bus to the next town over, and there was a street party going on, and it looked fantastic. Look at this. There's a street party going on, and they were displaying costumes, and they were having lines of dancers and pulling us into the dancing. Well, we later found out that this was basically a party that had been put on for us. They were reenacting a festival that they do every year, but they were doing it and with a lot of gusto. I mean, it was, yes, we were their special guests, but they were totally into it. And we partied into the night with these people because Jocelyn set it up. So, as I said, we have more pictures from that trip than we do from the others, but fantastic other circuits you can do. I'll let Jocelyn talk about Eastern Cuba.
Yeah. So, Eastern Cuba, much less visited than Havana, Cienfuegos, Trinidad. Eastern Cuba is for those that really want to get off the beaten path on travel, who might be open to, quote unquote, roughing it a little bit more, right? This is a beautiful Santiago de Cuba harbor. Santiago de Cuba was the first capital of Cuba, and then it was moved to Havana. And so in this, starting in Santiago de Cuba and really staying on the eastern side, there's a beautiful national park called Humboldt National Park that we visit on this tour here. And these are just some really pretty profound revolutionary symbols here in Santiago as really the birthplace of revolution. You're seeing to the right Revolution Square with Antonio Maceo. He was one of the first revolutionary leaders in the first Revolutionary War, and then those blades are representing machetes, right? So a really powerful image there in the Revolution Square in Santiago de Cuba, contrasted with beautiful nature. This is on the drive that we do heading over to Baracoa. Baracoa is, we'll see in the next slide here, really going from really dry to really lush forest on the very eastern tip of Cuba. And Baracoa is a small community that is on the very eastern tip of Cuba. And it's a landmark is the El Yunque, which is an anvil-shaped mountain that you can see in all parts of Baracoa. And Baracoa is actually one of my favorite places to travel to Cuba. And the reason for that is it really feels like it's frozen in time, even more so than the changes that are going on in Havana. So here you'll see local conga line that's playing in the streets. Very rich, again, in lots of music and lots of natural beauty here. And so over here, we make a special effort to go to Rio Toa, which is just a beautiful turquoise river that you would never guess would be in Cuba.
And I understand that there's particular cuisine in Baracoa.
Yes,
I didn't have a picture of it, but
yeah. Yeah, they have a delicious chocolate. They're known, this is where the chocolate comes from in Cuba. Who knew that Cuba is known for its chocolate? Anybody? No? Who knows about Cuban coffee?
Yeah.
Anybody? Okay.
No,
all right, great. But they also are really well known for their coconut sauce that they do just over here on the eastern side, which really isn't found in Havana or other parts of the country.
And many of us know that Cuba is also associated with baseball. And so you might see pickup games, you might see league games, and people like to talk about baseball. Some of us brought trading baseball cards with the Cuban Major League Baseball players, and when we gave those as little gifts, they were very appreciated.
And then moving to the western side of the island, to Vinales Valley, beautiful scenery here. Again, this is probably one of the other popular areas that's visited outside of Havana. Here is a shot of beautiful Vinales National Park. What you're seeing are called mogotes, which are limestone karst. And you know, this is really the tobacco headquarters where most of the tobacco is grown in Cuba. And making sure to visit tobacco farms. And again, the sense of this rural life. You know, I can't stress enough how different Havana is from the rest of the country. There's been a lot of articles written on Cuba recently, and one of them just recently said, you know, the headline was, outside of Havana, people are still waiting for the tourists to come. And I can't stress that enough. You know, I think there's the message that we get about travel to Cuba from here is very different than what's actually going on the ground.
So, enter. just a little sample of art and kind of entering the doorway of Cuba. We're happy to talk to you more. We're happy to help you do a trip for your own private small group or to welcome you into the small groups that we organize, just to share the information and context and enthusiasm we have with you. We can take questions and answers today, and we're also in Ann Arbor. Jocelyn is going home to Havana, but we have some other people from Journeys here, and I'm here, and we'd love to have you come see us. And she'd love to have you come down and take a picture.
And on a last note, you know, just to wrap up about any sort of travel to Cuba, Cuba is a land of contradictions, right? I often tell people when they come down to Cuba, you know, you're here to experience Cuba, but don't try to understand Cuba, right? And especially now, it's going through great change. The two most important things you can bring to a trip to Cuba is patience and flexibility. Okay, great.
And an expectation to have a wonderful time.
And an expectation.
And to be very warmly, warmly welcomed.
So, yeah, we'll have an opportunity to take questions. We actually have a microphone right there that you can head up and. Oh, okay, I can repeat. We can repeat the question.
Now I see on Spirit Air they have commercial flights, but then I don't know what the procedure, you know. Do they have to approve of you before you go?
So
how long does that take? Mm-hmm. What's the longest you can decide to stay there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question is on commercial flights, right? And this is a very hot topic. It's changing dramatically. Just last week, JetBlue offered their first commercial flight into Santa Clara. And Robin, the founder, the president of Journeys, was just letting me know that Delta just made an announcement that they will also be flying in to Havana starting December 1st, right? After being in Cuba for so long, I like to joke that I'll believe it when I see it, right? But it is true that commercial flights are starting. Now, what does that mean for you as travelers? So that means that you can fill out a form that you'll say that you are traveling under the 12 categories of travel. And at that point, you will be responsible for keeping track of your activities that you do during that time. It means that you have to keep a full schedule of educational activities. If you're on a people-to-people program, you have to keep track of who you're talking to, etc. As I mentioned before, it's unlikely that the Office of Foreign Assets Control would audit you or would ask to have more information about your trip, but it's possible, right? And so there's no... I'm sorry, what was that?
Does anybody have to approve anything? Do you need approval before you get on the flight?
Yeah, there's no approval now that happens. It's more of the honor system, if you will, right? And so you can go and travel yourself. You can book a ticket now flying into Santa Clara. The thing that I would stress is that travel to Cuba on your own is challenging. So oftentimes, you know, this last season in particular, I remember being stopped by a couple of young Americans that were traveling and said, "Oh, you look like a foreigner. Can you help me out?" I said, "Sure." And they said, "You know, we got here about 3 days ago and we rented a car and we went to the office and, you know, we have this confirmation letter and says that we rented a car and we went there." And they said, "Oh, sorry, Nene. Sorry, you know, honey. There's no cars. Come back tomorrow," right? So then they came back tomorrow and they said, "Sorry, there's still no cars," right? And so they're here for a 7-day trip, and 3 days into it, they still haven't gone anywhere because they're still waiting for trips. They try to get a ticket on Via Azul on the public bus system. Tickets are sold out, right? And so this is what you're going to come into when traveling to Cuba, right? Especially if you're traveling on your own. These are some pretty difficult times, especially with the explosion of travel that's happening now, right? Cuba's doing its best to kind of accommodate that, but there are growing pains. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one more question.
So where is the best place to just relax and swim, really, without...
Well, unfortunately, if you were swimming with a Cuban and talking about what they're talking about, you can't just, unfortunately, you can't just go and, you know, go to one of these all-inclusive resorts that 1 million Canadians go to a year. You know, you have to do these educational activities, whether it's you know, talking with local artists or visiting a school or you know, seeing a different community project.
Where is the sea best to swim in?
Oh, there's lots of places that are just beautiful to see. There's the Keys that are on the north that are just gorgeous. And then there's some places on the south, but usually the beaches on the north are very good for snorkeling. But again, that would have to be kind of incorporated into an educational activity.
So how feasible would it be to join a tour and then stay on for a week or two on your own?
Do you want me to take that?
Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
So the question was, how feasible would it be to join a tour and then stay for a week or two on your own? It's actually an excellent question, and we get that a lot, right? That now is possible. You would really then be on your own in terms of organizing all of your activities. You know, that would mean finding your own transportation, finding your own ways around or places you'd stay. Of course, that's something that we can help with, but you know, travel on an individual basis is a bit challenging, but it's allowed as long as you're, again, keeping track of all of your activities that you do, keeping a full-time list of your educational activities, people you come in contact with, etc.
So there'd be no difficulty getting a different return trip date, for example?
No, now that's kind of starting to change, especially with the influx of commercial flights.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference this year compared to last year.
Yeah.
You don't have to arrive and leave with your group.
Mm-hmm. But it would be important to specify that, you know, the organization, whether it's Journeys or with anyone, would only be responsible for that time for you on the trip. Then you would be responsible for your own trip.
Mm-hmm. Do you need a visa or approval from Cuba mm-hmm. to travel?
Yeah, the question is if you need a visa of approval, a tourist visa. You do need a tourist visa. That is something that now with commercial flights you can buy actually right there on the spot in Miami. And that visa is good for 30 days.
Mm-hmm. What's the best time of year to travel there in terms of both weather and also cultural activities, holidays, things like that?
Yeah.
What's the best time to see stuff? happening?
Sure, sure. That's a great question. Is when's the best time to travel to Cuba? So the real high season, they say, is between December to March. I've seen that really expand now into November to May or so. The great news is there are cultural activities going on all year round in Cuba. If I was going to travel right on my own, I really enjoy that time between February to May. I think that's a really nice time. I was just in Cuba. I flew in 2 days ago. What was it? Not last night? Yeah. It's really hot and sticky, but it's doable. And then, you know, for example, in Santiago de Cuba in July, which is a very hot month in Cuba, they have the Carnival celebration, which is just fantastic to go to, which is very infrequently visited by foreigners. Any other questions?
So the longest you're allowed to stay is 30 days?
That is the longest that they give you, a 30-day visa. You can renew that for, I believe, up to 90 days is the limit. But then there's a whole process at which you have to go to immigration and explain why you're staying, what you're doing, and then you can renew it again. Yeah, so you could stay up to 90 days on a tourist visa, but 30 days is the usual amount.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent question. Thank you so much. The question was about language schools. So yet another difficulty about Cuba. How many people speak Spanish? Okay. How many people speak Cuban Spanish? Yeah. So Cuban Spanish is they tend to slur their words together. It's a little challenging to pick up. You know, some language courses in Guatemala or Mexico, sometimes they're speak a little bit more clearly. Not really known for their language courses, but there are some that happen in Cuba. And also in terms of people's language ability, you'll find there are many people that speak English in Havana, and then as you get out, there are really fewer people, maybe some key phrases, except for those that are involved in the tourism industry, which can speak English.
You have to return to the U.S. or can you go on to?
Yeah, you can continue on to another destination after that. But in order to enter into Cuba, you have to have a return ticket.
To the U.S. Or
to going on somewhere else. Yeah.
You have to be leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you could book a ticket in and then leave to Cancun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it difficult if you have dietary restrictions to travel?
That's a great question. Vegetarian food restrictions, right? Just as Joan was joking, the revolution came at the cost of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Common misconception about Cuban food is that it's spicy. It is not spicy. If you you really love spicy food, I strongly suggest you bring a bottle of Tabasco, right? In terms of accommodating vegetarians, it's really not difficult, but don't expect a wide variety of food. In the time that I've been living in Cuba in the last 5 years, I've seen a huge increase in the improvement of the quality of food, specifically in Havana and in some of the larger areas. But you know, you should really kind of be expecting more bland food. And in terms of opportunities or selections for vegetarians, you have your rice and beans and eggs and some sautéed vegetables. Yeah. Another question.
Do they have ATMs there?
Excellent question. Yeah. So about ATMs, do not have ATMs that we are still not allowed to use our credit cards and debit cards. And so this is a cash economy when we go and travel down there. That was actually approved about a year ago that we are supposed to be allowed to use our credit cards and debit cards, but yet it has not happened yet. And so that's why I kind of joke about those commercial flights as well. I'll believe it when I see it, right? The reason for that is that banks are really nervous about trading and having those financial interactions with Cuba due to the fact that the U.S. embargo is still in place. Okay. So when you go down there, you want to bring cash with you on your trip.
Mm-hmm. U.S. cash?
Yeah, you can bring U.S. cash, or you can also bring euros or Canadian dollars. The exchange rate for U.S. cash, we get hit with a 13% commission fee when changing money. Yeah, it's pretty steep when changing money from U.S. dollars into convertible unit currency, the CUC, as we call it. Yeah. Yeah. Have you been reading about Cuba? Or
my daughter just went there.
Oh.
And so I did a little homework so she could buy some fine cigars.
Ah.
Ratios were. And before she left, I gave her some euros. So because you get a better exchange rate,
I believe,
with the euros than you do with the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, that's very right. Yeah, that's correct. And that's a great point about cigars. You know, now as of December 17th, 2014, you're allowed to import up to $100 worth of cigars, rum, and coffee. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she went the limit.
She went the limit. Yes.
How about Canadian? Is that...
Yeah, Canadian money is fine as well to bring. You can exchange that. You know, did you guys know that there are 3 million tourists that go and visit Cuba every year? Now that number is increasing with the increase of American travelers. But of that 3 million, 1 million of those are Canadians.
Is their exchange rate better?
Yes, their exchange rate is better than the United States. Yeah.
For Canadians, do they have the same people-to-people program, or can you go to Canada without, can you go to Cuba and be Canadian and not need that? Are Canadians able to go?
Yeah, Canadians are able to go freely as they don't have that U.S. embargo in place.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to fly from Canada then?
No, they could travel from the United States too, but you know, as we only have charter flights now, it's a lot cheaper for them to actually fly from Canada all the way to Cuba than it would be for them to travel to Miami and then travel to Cuba. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a little late. Sure. Well, how do you live there? Do you have citizenship?
Or
if somebody wants to.
Yeah. How do I live there? Yeah. I have a special visa, and because I own a company, then I'm allowed to live there due to that fact. Yeah.
And Jocelyn, how easy was it to get that paperwork?
Es complicado. Es complicado. Yeah, I know. You know, I just can't stress enough as we were preparing for this talk, Cuba is really a fascinating destination. Again, I've been able to lead tours all over the world, and really I'm very centered in Cuba. There's a lot to explore there. And the people, I can't stress enough, that's what really has attracted me to really changing my life and being based there, is that the kind of lifestyle that's there, the interactions with people. It's a very different lifestyle than I have here. But you know, as Joan will attest, it's a really different experience in terms of your everyday average travel trip. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
More general question. Does the Cuban media give the general population a fairly accurate view of what's going on in the rest of the world in terms of
Yes. Yeah, so they have access to Telesur, which is kind of like the CNN or the national news for Latin America, based out of Ecuador, I believe. And so they receive that news programming. But you know, I think overall information, access to information is difficult in Cuba. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you. You know what's the great thing about question and answer is you remind me all of things that I forgot to mention when I was talking. So yeah, connectivity. That also is changing greatly. Now there are some hotels that are based in Havana that provide free wireless internet, which is a really big deal in Cuba. And there are more than 50 hotspots now in throughout the area in Cuba in different parks. They have them in parks where people, you'll see them congregating, and you buy a card for access of for about $2, and you get a username, password, and then you're able to check your internet there. You know, so it's again like a communal activity where you're hanging out with everybody in the park, checking your internet, checking your email. So internet is changing. There's more of these hotspots, but it's still slower than we're used to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Phones is also another thing that's changing. So now Verizon is offering roaming service there. I believe Sprint is as well. But in general, your phone won't work in Cuba, mm-hmm. unless you sign up for those roaming services. So we have time for just a couple more questions, and then Joan and I will be up here too if folks are interested. Yeah.
Are there any specific groups or categories of U.S. citizens that are still not allowed to go?
Not that I'm aware of.
Are you specifically thinking of one?
Yeah, the question was about specific groups of Americans that aren't allowed to go and travel to Cuba. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think that would be on a case-to-case basis. Anybody else?
What would they be, prisoners?
Yeah, what are you, I mean, are you thinking former military? Were you, did you have a subpopulation in mind that you were just?
Not specifically.
Okay. Yeah.
So if I flew from Cancun to Cuba, back to Cancun on a European passport.
Yeah, if you are flying on a European passport and, you know.
Am I going to report, although I have a U.S. passport as well? Or am I going to be
there? That's a little tricky. We can talk about that maybe after the talk, and we can talk maybe one-on-one about that. Yeah. Okay.
I wanted to clarify one thing, especially about the question you asked about whether you could stay on after a tour. I know this is, Journeys has very independent-minded travelers who come to us for our services, and we're very aware that people want to do that kind of thing. And there is, so we are trying to be the company that stakes out that middle ground that says, you know, we want to help you figure out how to do what you want to do, but with enough services that it qualifies as a tour. So that if you came to us as a party of two or four or six for your experience in Cuba, it would be a tour. It would be a tour, and it would be your personal tour. We don't have to sell it to people you don't know. It would be just your tour, and it would be legal, you know, and it would follow all the rules. And the same, so we're also working that out now with. So let's say you join our group for Rhythm of a Lively Land or Essence of Eastern Cuba, and there's 14 people, but maybe you want to stay on longer. It would be then be, okay, you're going to do two tours. One is going to be this group of 14 that you decided to join, and the other is going to be your own very personal little tour, but it's going to be customized.
Yeah.
Would you talk a little bit about the kinds of cultural activities a person experiences on the people-to-people tour, and also, are you expected to do several in one day, or?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, great question. No, you got to keep going. You got to keep going all the time. No, yeah, this is a no. That's a great question. So, talking about examples of cultural activities that we do that connotate a people-to-people activity. Right? So as I said, people-to-people activities are really interactions with local Cubans. So what that could mean is that we visit Alejandro in his home, and he is an art collector, and he welcomes you into his home, and he talks to you about his father, who was a ceramicist at the Institute of Superior Arts, and he welcomes you, you meet his family, you have a cup of coffee, and you see his beautiful art collection that he's incorporated throughout, you know, through generations, right? It could also mean visiting the Museum of Fine Arts and actually having a private tour with a local art historian, an expert in Cuban art, and talking about the different artwork that you're seeing. It could mean a visit to a polyclinic, which is learning about the healthcare system in Cuba. It could be a salsa dance, a class lesson.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the other thing to say in this conversation is there's a lot of gamesmanship going on. Because in countries that don't have such a requirement, if you're a curious person, you're probably doing people-to-people stuff all the time. And like Jocelyn said, it's questionable who's going to count up how many official people-to-people experiences you're having. This is a lot of satisfying the U.S. government and satisfying the Cuban government that everything is kind of that is, it's okay to do this even though there's still an embargo in place. So nobody's counting the number of people-to-people experiences, but we go into it, because we would have wanted to go into it this way anyway, we go into it with like, how can we really know the Cuban people and meet them in their workshops and in their schools and in their daily lives? And then we try to do as much of that as we can because that's what we love to do. I don't know if that answers your question.
And also just to tag on this idea that activities are usually between 9 to 3 or so, and then you're going to have a couple of hours in the afternoon to either rest or to go exploring on your own. You know, this idea that, you know, some people think you have to have blinders on when you're in a people-to-people program. Not in the least. You know, these activities that we put together are interactions that we think are valuable in terms of your travel. Right, would be interesting to you. Yeah.
there snorkeling excursions that you're aware of?
There are lots of snorkeling excursions, beautiful reefs, specifically that I love are on the Zapata Peninsula, which is the boot, if you will, of Cuba. There's an amazing flamingo congregation that's there, and then there's some stand-up paddleboarding too that we're introducing. And you know, we're able to do this with working in congregation, with working with naturalist guides who are talking to us about the fish that we're seeing, or you know, conservation efforts that are taking place about the snorkeling that we're seeing. That right there.
Would you be able to do a bird watching tour in the Vinales Valley?
I would be able to do a bird watching tour. Yes, yes, you are not the first that has asked me about that, and I'm sure not the last. No, birding is fantastic in the Vinales area, as well as in central Cuba, in beautiful Finca La Belin, which is another place that I've done a number of birding tours.
So we expect to see on our next year's calendar that there will be a group trip that will be especially about birding. And also talk to us about your interest in for your own plan in including birding.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little about security, safety, any unique Cuban laws? Oh my God, is that illegal?
Sure. So the question was about security and safety. Cuba is a very safe country. You know, I always tell my guests that you should feel free to walk around, but also be aware, just as you would anywhere in the world, of where you're walking and what you're doing. I've had a lot of photographers on my trips, and a lot of people that walk around with really big cameras, and there's no issue whatsoever. In many of the hotels, and now even in some of the casas, in those private bed and breakfasts, they have safes that you can lock your valuables in there, right? And so I always recommend people to do that. But in general, Cuba tends to be a very, very safe destination. In terms of strange laws that I should make sure that you're aware of, nothing really comes to mind. I mean, it is illegal to import satellite devices, but you know, that's really not something that many tourists bring in.
Have you ever heard speaking critically of the government, would you be hauled away?
No. Not at all. Nope, no. And I want to be clear on that too. That's a part of the people-to-people program, is that, you know, there's a lot of controversy between travel to Cuba, and you know, that part of the interaction is to really talk about some of those more heated subjects. You know, people, there's no question that's off the table, and many, if not actually all of the guides that we work with are very experienced, and I always challenge my groups to ask them a question that they have not heard before. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
The ID badge she's wearing, who wears those?
That means that she's works in the office of the city historian, because she's in a UNESCO World Heritage Site of the old Havana. Mm-hmm. So that just is her like cleaning badge, mm-hmm, that says that she's working there.
What is the expectation of, you know, Cuba's had 3 million tourists from all over the world. I'm sure a lot of Europeans, Russians, you know, same types of people you see like in the Dominican Republic and in Mexico. What are the expectations of Americans? What are they showing for so many thousands this year? You know, what's that prognosis? Because, you know, the infrastructure of Cuba is, it can only take so much.
Yeah.
But they're already seeing 3 million people every year.
Yeah.
So they've done a decent job of setting up for those folks.
Sure,
since
sure.
They have the run of the land, basically.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
They don't have to have all these confounding cultural things to be able
mm-hmm.
to do.
Mm-hmm.
So have you seen numbers from the U.S. government in one way or another, what the expectation is for the growth, given all these cruise ships are trying to come in? Spirit Airlines, I got a thing from Spirit Airlines, from
yeah.
Miami for Havana,
mm-hmm.
for like $330 round trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I threw in a couple dates.
$91 yeah. to yeah. Santa Clara to Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable.
So,
yeah.
You know, so
that
how quickly are they expecting the growth to be? I wouldn't want to go there after a million and a half American tourists have been there, because it'll change.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all these expatriate type communities in Mexico and Belize and throughout Latin America.
Sure.
So you know, the best thing would be to go as soon as possible,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you can actually experience that culture
mm-hmm.
before it becomes Americanized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a really common question that I get about what are the numbers of people that are coming, what's the growth rate, and it is really increasing rapidly. And for example, you know, for a number of years they had 3 million people on average. Last year they exceeded 3 million people in November, right? And so that was substantially before the end of the year for their numbers.
The tourist year. That's early in the tourist year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's early in the tourist year. And in terms of regular numbers, you know, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it is growing at a rapid rate. And Cuba is doing its best to expand, you know, in terms of a travel industry. You know, for example, rooming lists now for groups, some hotels are demanding those 90 days in advance, right? So that means you need to be signed up for your trip 90 mm-hmm. days before departure date, which is kind of unheard of for some people. Some people say, oh, I want to go to Cuba in 2 months or so, right? And so I think there is a little bit of a contradiction, though, as to what we hear in the media here, right, versus what's actually happening on ground. While things are changing on the ground, it's much slower, right, especially outside of Havana. So you travel to a place like Santiago de Cuba, and to a certain extent, things are you really don't notice a big change that's going on. People are still using horse buggies to get around. They still have Oldsmobiles from the 50s that are driving around, just like in Havana as well. And so while there is a big rush to travel and get there before it changes, I think it's important to know that what our perception of change happening that's happening right now in the States versus what actually is happening on the ground is a little bit different, right? Yeah.
I just, on that note, and I'd like to get your opinion, that discussion of Cuba changing and we need to get there quickly, I feel in some ways, and I'd like to get your feedback, that that's sort of disrespectful to the Cubans, because I feel that there's going to be, as there are many countries in the world, cultural preservation because the Cubans themselves have a deep heritage and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, as we see when they moved to Miami,
mm.
you know, they didn't let go of their culture. They're one of
right.
the proudest cultures in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of think that that's our idea that it's going to change. And that's sort of diminishing the fact that there's this very deep, rich culture in Cuba that will always be there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your
No, I mean, I think that's true. I think that Cubans are very proud to be Cuban. I think also, you know, there's no doubt about it that the government has a very strong hold on the growth that is happening, that there is a future development that's going on in these private businesses, these Casas Particulares and these Paladares that are happening, and smaller enterprises. But for the most part, it's somewhat controlled, right? And in terms of change of the Cubans, I think it's important to remember, you know, the national sport of Cuba is baseball. It is not soccer. And so there's been a very deep ties with the American culture, America in general. And so I think there will always be like a unique relationship between America and Cuba. So this idea, you know, a lot of people think, well, I want to get there before McDonald's comes. I think we're a ways off before that. I think it's a little bit... yeah, I just don't think it's realistic.
What is the age distribution? They get free medical, you know, so they can have as many children as they want. You know, a lot of these Latin American countries, you know, half or two-thirds of the population is under 30.
Yeah.
What's the distribution in Cuba? That's
yeah.
the age group, I think, will be the ones that will be more or less, if not changing the Cuban culture, there'll be some changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is that distribution?
So Cuba has a declining birth rate. It's a big problem. Their population is getting older, and the younger population are leaving, right? They're going to the States, they're going to Ecuador, they're going to other countries. And so it's a big problem that they're having. Also, you have a high rate of education of women in Cuba, and so they tend to choose to have children later on in life, right? And so that'll be a big kind of question mark about what the future of Cuba will hold, right? I want to be kind of aware we've been doing a lot of question and answers, and you know, if people want to maybe take a break, or Joan and I will be here. Do you guys
and Lene to... in the back. Lene, yeah. Raise your hand. Lene has been to Cuba as well, and will be going back this year with Jocelyn.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming out and listening to our presentation.